You know, the economic calculation argument, it's a classic argument against the possibility of socialism put by defenders of free market, private enterprise, capitalism. And it's set out in particularly clear and concise form in an article in 1920 called The Economic Calculation in the Socialist Commonwealth by Ludwig von Mises. Was an Austrian, was appropriately enough a member of the Austrian School of Economics. And in fact, the title of this meeting, Baron von Mises' Objection to Socialism, it's an attempt to be amusing, because the Austrian school, which supports free market capitalism, then you've got von Mises, you've got von Hayek, you've got these people who were, well, they weren't actually barons, it was just like being made a knight. His father did something for the emperor, or built some railways or something, and he was made a noble, just in the same way, incidentally, as Lenin's father too was a noble in the Russian civil service. Anyway, so that was the attempt at a joke in the title. Now, this article that von Mises wrote in 1920 was translated into English in 1935. Now, it was no accident that this issue was being discussed in 1920, as the First World War had been followed by a revolution in Germany that had brought the Social Democrats to power, and one in Russia that eventually brought to power the Bolsheviks, who were essentially, in fact, the left-wing Social Democrats. Now, both of these Social Democrats, their theories committed them to introducing socialism in place of capitalism. Now, in this talk, I'm not going to refute von Mises' case for a free market, private enterprise economy that never has existed and never will, but to deal only with the arguments against socialism in this 1920 article. But first, what is it that he mean by socialism? Here's what he says. Under socialism, all the means of production are the property of the community, and production goods in a socialist commonwealth are exclusively communal. They are inalienable property of the community, and thus res ex commercium. Now, this is a phrase and a concept from Roman law, which translates as things outside commerce, meaning that they cannot be owned by anybody, so they cannot be bought and sold. So, I mean, this definition is okay as far as it goes, this what means the definition of socialism. But it misses out one essential feature, and that is that socialism has to also involve democratic control as well as common ownership. And it introduces another one, which is not essential. Because immediately after, he writes, under socialism, all the means of production are the property of the community. He goes on, it goes without saying that the community will only be in a position to employ its powers of disposal through the setting up of a special body for the purpose. Now, this suggests that in a socialist society, the whole of production would have to be directed by a single body from a single centre, by a single central planning authority. Now, to be fair to von Mises, this was the view of those he was criticising, but it was assuming that central planning was the only way that a socialist society could organise production without markets and without money. So his criticism is largely a criticism of the central planning, command economy model of socialism. In fact, not only this, since as I said, as far as von Mises was concerned, it didn't matter whether this central planning authority was democratically controlled or not. So it could, in his view, be controlled by some unaccountable minority. So this meant that his criticism was also a criticism of societies where the means of production were things outside commerce, but not democratically controlled. I mean, this type of society has been called state capitalism, bureaucratic collectivism, oriental despotism, mandrial society, but in fact it came to be applied to what existed in the USSR. But even so, it was also, if you like, a criticism of necessarily democratic real socialism. Now, I've handed out a sheet where he states his case that a socialist society will not... What is that, anyway?
Hello, mate.
Oh, you, is it? You've ruined the recording now. Anyway, as I say, in that sheet which I've handed out, von Mises sets out his case that a socialist society will not be able to calculate how to produce in the most economical way, that is, in terms of the what labour and what resources are available to society. I mean, it's a simple case, even if a bit circular. I mean, he defines rational calculation as calculation in terms of exchange value as objectively determined by the free play of the market and as measured by money, and then says that as there would be no market in socialism for means of production and intermediate products, the producer goods, socialist society would not be able to calculate rationally because it couldn't calculate economically. I mean, you know, the short answer to this would be, okay, yes, socialism won't be able to calculate economically in your sense, but that doesn't mean that it can't calculate rationally at all. Actually, however, von Mises conceded that there were certain rational decisions that socialist society would be able to take without having recourse to his economic calculation, that is, calculation without needing to have recourse to exchange value as established by the free play of market forces. Now, the two things which he said, even from his point of view, a socialist society could decide to do without his economic calculation. The first was what should be produced, and the second was how to distribute the consumer goods and services that had been produced. Now, he said this because neither of these are economic calculations in his sense. I mean, deciding what to produce is a simple value judgment. People, you just decide what to produce. And the second one about by deciding how to distribute consumer goods is another political administrative decision. So saying that socialist society will be able to decide rationally what to produce is a huge concession, which incidentally was later withdrawn by his followers. Anyway, let's deal first with the distribution of consumer goods. Von Mises said that a socialist society could adopt any number of methods, for instance, so-called labour time vouchers, the direct rationing for particular products through coupons that could just be exchanged for them, even money, in inverted commas, by which he in fact means all-purpose vouchers, which are expressed in pounds, dollars, or euros, rather than labour time, but which wouldn't really be money in the conventional sense. It's what others have called consumption money. Now, the only criticism he makes is that if labour time vouchers were adopted, they would not be entitling people to receive back from society what they had contributed in terms of labour, as some of its proponents claim. Even if it took into account the skill, the unpleasantness, or the difficulty of the work done. This was because, in his view, an individual's contribution to production could not be measured without the existence of a free labour market. I mean, I'd say that in view of the fact that production is now a collective effort, it can't be measured at all, not even under capitalism. I suggest that, you know, should the need arise, say because of some temporary shortage of some goods, the best way of dealing with this would be direct rationing of the goods involved, with those not being in short supply, being distributed free or made available for people to take freely to use. But I'm not going to go into this further. I mean, the talk this afternoon is not about distribution in a socialist society, but about production. Now, as stated, von Mises conceded that deciding what to produce would not present socialist society with a problem of economic calculation, since deciding this was a value judgment, in other words, simply a decision to decide what was desirable, what was wanted. But his concession went further, as it applied not just to the choice of which consumer goods and services to provide. He said it also applied to whether to undertake and where to situate an infrastructure project. An example which he gives is that of a waterworks, by which it seems to mean a hydroelectric plant involving the construction of a weir or a dam. He says that someone envisaging such a project would not be able to include in his calculation, his economic calculation, the beauty of the waterfall which the scheme might impair, even though this might well be the deciding factor as to whether or not to go ahead. I mean, this is what he says specifically. It is customary to term such elements extra-economic. This perhaps is appropriate. We're not concerned with disputes over terminology, yet the considerations themselves can scarcely be termed irrational. Any place where men regard as significant the beauty of a neighbourhood or of a building, the health, happiness and contentment of mankind, the honour of individuals or nations, they're just as much motive forces of rational conduct as are economic factors in the proper sense of the word. Even where they're not substitutable against each other on the market and therefore do not enter into exchange relationships. And he adds that monetary calculation cannot embrace such factors, lies in its very nature. I mean, this is an enormous concession on his part, as such extra-economic, which means outside of economics, factors will be relevant in all decisions about how to use land. But further, these factors, such as the health and safety, ecology and so on, could also be involved in decisions as to which production methods to employ. I mean, it's a concession which goes a long way to undermining his whole case. In fact, such considerations already under capitalism are taken into account. For instance, this thing about the HS2 and the third Heathrow runway. Now, basically, von Mises sees only three possible ways of, in theory, calculating how to produce what has been decided should be produced. Now, the first is calculations in units of exchange value as expressed by money, in other words, monetary calculation, which is what he favours. The second is what he calls calculation in natura, which you don't have to be a Latin scholar to work out, means calculation in terms of the natural forms of raw materials and products used in production, or calculation in kind. In fact, in German, it's known as a natural economy. And the third possibility, which he concedes is certainly possible, is calculation in units of labour time. Now, his main criticism is, in fact, against calculation in kind. So let's understand in more detail what this means. It means, as I said, calculation in specific physical amounts of materials and labour to produce something. I mean, to build a house, for instance, you need so many bricks, so much, I don't know, kilos of cement, so much length of wiring, so many roofers, bricklayers, plumbers, and other specialist workers. I mean, this is done in all societies, including capitalism. So what those who propose calculation in kind, they're not advocating this as a replacement for monetary calculation, but as a calculation which is sufficient on its own. It doesn't need to be supplemented or duplicated by monetary calculation, by von Mises' economic calculation. Now, the person von Mises singles out for criticism, for advocating that only calculation in kind would be required in a socialist society, was Otto Neurath. Now, Neurath, I've handed out one of the other handouts, deals with his arguments. Neurath was a fellow Austrian, an economist with an interest, even before the First World War, in war economies. And during the war, he was actually employed by the government department in Austria-Hungary, administering the war economy, and later in the same department in Germany. I mean, he wasn't a Marxist, didn't claim to be a Marxist, but he did at one point join the German Social Democratic Party after the end of the war. Now, he was the person responsible for economic planning in the short-lived 1919 Munich Workers' Council. And he prepared a paper for them entitled The Character and Course of Socialization, in which he argued for the transformation of the wartime administrative economy into an economy in kind. Now, he clearly had in mind a centrally planned and administered natural economy where a single planning authority, which he called, or rather his translators called, a central office for measurement in kind, this single body would decide what should be produced, and then it would mobilise enterprises to produce it and the various intermediate products that would be needed. But he also envisaged workers being, in effect, paid in kind by being allocated for free decided amounts of particular consumer goods and services. He actually uses the term wages in kind. Now, von Mises also had something to say about labour time accounting, which some people in the Marxist tradition have claimed was Marx's view. Now, he raised two objections to calculation in units of labour time, the one theoretical and the other practical. I mean, he conceded that if the labour theory of value which he interpreted as a labour theory of exchange value, price that was valid, then calculation in labour time would be a possible alternative to monetary calculation. But that, as the labour theory of value was wrong, exchange value was not determined by labour content. This would not be calculation in units of exchange value, and so would not be economic or economical calculation. I mean, it's an easy answer to this one, since the Marxian labour theory of value does not argue under capitalism goods exchange in accordance with the labour time taken to produce them from start to finish. I mean, this objection is irrelevant. I mean, Marx knew perfectly well that under capitalism, goods tended to exchange at what he called their price of production, which is the cost of production plus the markup for the normal rate of profit. Now, von Mises' second objection to labour time accounting is more substantial and in my view, is fatal to them. I mean, he argued that the problem of reducing complex or unskilled labour into units of simple labour, which would be needed to do this sort of calculation in labour time, couldn't be solved in the absence of free or of any market for labour, which of course wouldn't exist in socialism. And he quotes Marx as saying right at the beginning of Volume 1 of Capital that this reduction of skill to simple labour is shown and known by experience, but of course it's the experience of the labour market. So, you know, von Mises says, okay, social society could decide, you know, how to reduce skilled labour to simple labour by an administrative decision, but it still wouldn't be an accurate unit of his economic calculation. Now, I think that von Mises has a point here. I mean, skilled labour can only be reduced to units of simple labour through the market. I think that Marx would have agreed, because there's a surprisingly large amount of Marx's writings are against introducing labour money under capitalism, which he explained was not possible to establish the value of a commodity directly, but only afterwards via the market. So if this couldn't be done under capitalism, but even less able to be done in a socialist society where markets would no longer exist. But there's another objection to labour time accounting, which is a socialist one rather than von Mises's. If it was practical, what would be the point of it? I mean, to calculate the supposed labour time content of everything produced would necessitate a huge bureaucracy that would itself be an enormous waste of resources. Well, of course, having said this, I've got to say straight away that there will, of course, be calculation, some calculation in labour time in socialism, but as part of the general calculation in kind. I mean, you will measure types of labour by the particular skill, by the number of man hours that would be used. And I can also add that I doubt that if in a socialist society, labour is going to be in short supply, and so in need of being economised. Now, this raises more general point about the availability of resources in socialism. Most resources, I suggest, will be in relatively abundant supply, especially once the artificial waste and the organised scarcity of capitalism have been removed. I'm talking about, you know, everything to do, not just everything to do with buying and selling, but arms, and also the fact that capitalism only produces, the profit is supposed to be in the centre, but in fact it's a barrier. So once those have been removed, most resources will be in relatively abundant supply. I mean, this is not going to be absolute or sheer abundance, of course. I mean, that's just a concept that pro-capitalist economists have introduced to try to show that there will always be scarcity. But we're talking about there will be enough, but more than enough, to satisfy people's needs. And this means that socialist society won't need to imperatively minimise costs to produce things as cheaply as possible, but it's going to have considerable leeway to decide to employ methods that, from a strictly economical point of view, will not be the least costly. Now, remember that von Mises has already conceded that value judgments introducing outside economic factors could play a part in deciding where to build infrastructure as well as what consumer goods to produce. So, I mean, similar value judgments could also play a part in deciding how and where as well as what to produce. I mean, value judgments aren't necessarily arbitrary. I mean, in some cases they could be made democratically by a vote. In others, there could be some sort of point system where you list the benefits and drawbacks and they're given separate weighting and you see what result comes out. Now, von Mises' objection to socialism is based mainly on the assumption, which was admittedly accepted by those he was criticising, that the only alternative to the market in a socialist society was a centrally planned command economy where the decisions as to what to produce and how to produce would have to be taken by a single central body if resources were to be used economically in his sense. When he claimed that if tried, a centrally planned command economy would lead to hopeless chaos and eventually collapse. The followers of von Mises say this has been proved by what happened in Russia. But I don't think Russia was, in fact, it wasn't. They still had money in Russia, but even so, they did have a command economy of sorts, and it was relatively successful. The people at the top commanded that they should produce heavy industry, commanded that they should produce armaments and rockets to go to the moon. And they did it, so it did happen. But as I say, it was nothing to do with socialism. But one thing that did come out of this Soviet system was it led to theory, developments in the theory and mathematics of non-market resource allocation, for which one of those involved, Leonid Kantorovich, was awarded the Nobel Prize for Economics in 1975. Now, there seems no reason in principle why in a democratic socialist society, this couldn't work to supply consumer goods. But it would involve the central planners deciding what individuals needed and then distributing them to people free. This is what Otto Neurath had in mind. It was also what envisaged by Khrushchev in the 1960s when the Russian rulers were encouraging speculation about what communism would be like. I mean, it can still be described as a system of free distribution as opposed to one of free access. I mean, consumer goods would be distributed free, but what they were and the amounts would be decided by the central planners. Well, so to say, it might work, but it doesn't seem the best way to deal with the production and distribution of consumer goods in a socialist society. I mean, it's possible to imagine a system where the initiative as to what consumer goods to produce comes from the consumers rather than the central planners. You know, much more decentralized model in which individual consumption would be based on free access rather than free distribution. This would have something in common with the mythical consumer is king model of capitalism, which is theorized by another member of the Austrian school, Friedrich von Hayek, except that instead of the individual consumers deciding what should be produced by what they chose to buy, they would do so by what they chose to take freely from superstores and other distribution outlets. I mean, an efficient system of stock control, similar to what exists today, could ensure that the stores were always filled with what people indicated they needed by what they took. I mean, very crudely, a shortage on the shelves would be assigned to order more, maybe to produce more, and stuff left on the shelves would be sending the opposite message. As I said, collective services, libraries, schools, hospitals, and so on, as well as infrastructure projects, road, rail, transport, power station. Von Mises has already conceded that an element of value judgment enters into whether and where to undertake them or to situate them. Well, this could be decided in a socialist society, democratically, locally, or regionally, depending on those concerned or affected. Now, I'm not suggesting that any central planning of body would not need to calculate. I'm suggesting that any central planning authority would not need to produce or calculate in advance exactly what where every good should be or what every good should be produced and how it should be produced with a view to ensuring the cheapest and most economical way to produce them. I mean, given the abundance of most resources, the exact methods could be left to those producing them, so people working in a particular production unit. And of course, there'd need to be some general guidelines, and the central planning body will still be required to estimate what resources are, what resources are likely to be needed over a given period, and to identify where some resource needs to be economized or saved or minimized reasons for ecological reasons, but it's not the same as trying to plan everything in advance. I mean, if you like, it'd be central indicative planning rather than central command planning. Now, as to the methods particular industries or production units could apply, one rule to follow would be what is best from a technical point of view. Now, von Mises dismisses this as self-evidently not usable to calculate the best use of resources for the whole economy. It's on one of the quotes on that sheet. Okay, this is fair enough. It couldn't be used to decide what's used for the whole economy, but that's not what it would need to be applied to. It would be applied to the production of particular things. And again, there have also been advances in the theory and practice of non-market resource allocation since Kantorovich. I mean, the 2012 Nobel Prize for Economics was awarded to two people, Alvin Roth and Lloyd Shapley, for advances in the theory of resource allocation. Not that strictly speaking, and certainly not from von Mises' point of view, this left field really was economics. So to conclude, for calculations solely in kind in a socialist society, what we're talking about is a central planning body to gather and disseminate information about resources, an efficient system of stock control for consumer goods, democratic decision making, making value judgments for infrastructure and land use, the use of optimum technical production methods, and the application of non-market resource allocation theories. So that would be our case that von Mises is wrong in here when he says socialist society couldn't organise the production and distribution of wealth without money and without markets. On the contrary, we can, and the sources are all there. Okay, thanks.
Thank you for that.